Hi, and welcome to the Macro Show. We talk macro and try to make sense of markets that are going illiquid. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. So I've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got to talk about why the markets don't like the stimulus package. What's going on there? What's the politics of the situation? Markets are going illiquid? Oh, remember the security I told you to watch? You remember what that was? No, that wasn't Bitcoin. I'll let you think about it. We'll get to that in a little bit. We've got economic data. We've got money supply, credit conditions, all kinds of stuff. But let's first look at what happened in the markets today. We see the S&P 500. This is the largest traded ETF, SPY. It went down in the morning, of course, as normal. You know, dip buyers are back. And then fade into close and looks like headed down in after hours trading. And what was the driver on this? Well, the stimulus package. So what's the deal? Well, the problem is the market doesn't think the stimulus package is going to pass. Now, there's a number of reasons, and then there's also the problem of direct stimulus doesn't work. With a little bit of research courtesy of David Rosenberg, I learned today there have been five in the history of our country, five direct stimulus payments to Americans. And the data shows that the economic effects of those are almost non-existent. So all this hype, all this, you know, excitement that, you know, giving people some money is going to suddenly drive a massive, you know, economic run for years and have, you know, businesses just booming and profits go through the roof. It doesn't really make any sense, because if we have history of doing this five other times and we had nothing from it, why now? But that's what the market, you know, has been believing. And all of a sudden it doesn't think this bill can pass. Now, why is that? Well, because you might be thinking, well, I thought the Democrats have a majority, Steve, so that means they should be able to get it through. Well, you have to look at how this majority is set up. So you have the weakest majority since 1900. You have a House that has a 10-seat advantage to the Democrats, which I don't even care about the House. The Senate is really where things matter. Senate, you have 50-50, right down the middle, tie-breaking vote goes to the vice president, as we know, is soon to be a Democrat. So you say, well, what's the problem? You need a majority in the Senate to pass. You need 60 votes. And what did we hear this afternoon from the Republicans? We're not sure we really want to support this. We're not thinking we're going to. And a lot of people thought that, well, yeah, the Republicans are going to sign on to this deal. I mean, they'll be all over. They want to help people and do the right thing. This is the problem that people understand about politics. Politics is not about doing the right thing or the wrong thing, no matter what side you're on. Because from an investing perspective, you have to understand what the probabilities are of a bill like this passing and its effects. So you have to take whatever party affiliation you have and put it aside. Because the first role of any politician, first, is to get elected. Do you know what the second one is? Get reelected. And when you understand how things play out, when one party has a majority, do you know what happens at the next election, which would be in 2 years? Do you know what normally happens? The party in power loses seats. That is the most common outcome. Now, the Republicans don't appear like they want to play ball. They have really no incentive to. If they understand how this works, their job would be to make sure it doesn't really go through. Because if the Democrats get a big win, then guess what would happen in 2 years? They would probably pick up seats. If the Republicans can show that, no, they're pretty much still in control, even though they're not the majority anymore, then they can pick up seats. You got to understand how the game is played. And on top of that, the Republicans didn't really support Clinton's or Obama's stimulus packages. They were pretty much against that. So the challenge for President-elect Biden coming into this deal is he's got a really big package, $1.9 trillion. Assuming he can get all 50 Democrats on board, which there are some moderates in there, so they may not be too excited about this, he's got to convince 10 Republicans to go along with that. Now you say, but Steve, it doesn't matter. They're going to do something called reconciliation. All right, do you understand that reconciliation takes a lot of political capital to pull off? It's not something you just go do. And if you're going to go the route of reconciliation, now for those of you who are like, well, what's reconciliation? Well, reconciliation means you can pass a bill like the stimulus with a 50-50 majority, right? You just need 50 votes. I mean, not 50-50 majority, what's that? You just need 50 votes. And you get one of these you can do a year. One! That's why you don't see it happen very often. And they're really hard to do. You expend a lot of political capital to get this thing done on a reconciliation, and it takes a lot longer. I mean, there's no, you can't just jump in and say, we're going to go reconciliation, get it done tomorrow. It's not how it works. It wasn't designed to work that way. And so that potentially now, if they have to go there, it puts this thing out to April, May. And when you understand and look at the economic data, you see 3 months of declining retail sales. Yeah, there's some stimulus checks that have started to go out late last month and are going out this month. Do you think the economy can wait 3 more months to see something get done? Or, I mean, 4 more months? And that's the challenge here. So what the market is now starting to believe, that if something is going to pass a majority in the Senate, it's not going to be $1.9 trillion. It's going to be some a lot less. Now, we started out by talking about illiquid, briefly mentioning illiquid markets. And did you figure out what it is that is that security yet? You haven't? All right. Well, I know a couple of you know, and you're like, I know. We'll get to that in a few. Let's go through the economic data and we'll come back. Let's go back to Wednesday. Export price index out of South Korea down 5.4% from 4.6 a month before. South Korea is now is still exporting deflation and exporting even more of it. So what does that mean? It means the price of their goods is falling more than it did this time last year, from this time last year and from last month. So exporting deflation, not what you want to see if you're really bulled up on inflation. How about import prices? Are down 10.2%, virtually unchanged. So they're importing and exporting deflation. Now, I don't get too excited over Japan's core machinery orders because they're super volatile. Went from 2.8% the month before down to 11.3% in November. It's like I said, super volatile. I would be more interested in producer prices because this is prices coming out of the factory in Japan. And they export things there. Went from minus 2.3 to minus 2, so virtually unchanged. So you're seeing Japan, the factories, deflation, pumping out deflation. And let's keep going with China exports, slightly down to 18% year over year in December. That's a pretty solid number, I think. Overall, let's take a look and see if we can get a quick chart on that. And yeah, it's a pretty solid number. It's definitely above average. Coming back, imports up slightly to 6.5%. Let's move into Thursday, and that was out of China. Now, we're into the jobless report, so let's switch over to the total report here. And initial claims, seasonally adjusted, 965,000. This big number, up 181,000. Take off that seasonal adjustment, you're at 1.15 million jobs lost. Not inflationary. I mean, if you think the people losing their job and getting a one-time check from the government is inflationary, then go back to the history and look at those 5 times we sent out checks and you find out they weren't inflationary then, and they're certainly not going to be now. What I did find interesting about this report is we saw a big drop off in pandemic unemployment assistance. Now, I didn't see anything on why this was, but we saw that in the pandemic emergency. You see that went down. So I don't know if this is people dropping off of the program because the benefits are exhausted to them. I don't know. But total unemployment claims, so there is a bit of a plus, went from 19.2 million down to 18.4 million, a drop of 745,000 people. Again, I don't know anything about why they fell off of these programs. I'm hoping it's a good thing, but looking at the initial jobless claim number, it makes me think probably not. How about the U.S.? Export prices went up 1.1%. Import prices went up 0.9%. So you say, well, that's a plus. But it is because, you know, that means prices are rising. But when we look at the import price index, which is really the one I care mostly about, is because that is a sign of future inflation. If import prices in the U.S. are rising, then that means we are going to see higher prices of consumer goods. So here is the import price index against the consumer price index. And you can see, wow, there's a very strong relationship here. And if we scroll over and slide this a bit, we can see the import prices ticked up a little bit. And yet, despite the increase in import prices, the consumer price index is still languishing behind its recent high of 1.4 and here sitting at 1.28. So the question then would be, well, what could import prices continue to drive higher? Would that bring the CPI up? And that's where I turn to the dollar, because as you know, many of you know, I'm very dollar bullish, primarily due to QE and its relationship with the bond market. So we look at this and we say, wow, the dollar's already pretty low and import prices are kind of here. In fact, if normally with the dollar this low, you would expect import prices to be positive on a year-over-year basis, telling you there's structural problems going on in the global economy, which isn't really hard to figure out. Now, I know someone told me how to turn the tooltips off and I forgot to do that. So if that was you, thank you. I totally just realized I forgot to do that. So anyways, I'm looking at this saying, well, if the dollar starts to reverse, which I suspect it will at some point, well, that is going to spell bad news for import prices, driving them down and putting downward pressure on the CPI. And that will take away any hopes the Fed has of raising rates, which they aren't going to do anytime soon. Moving on back to South Korea, exports year over year basis, nice number, 12.6%. So South Korea, while prices are falling, the volume is up. Imports are virtually unchanged at 2.2%. Let's move along the lines here and see Friday data, all kinds of stuff going on. French CPI flat at zero. So neither inflationary or deflationary, right in the neutral zone there. How about Spanish CPI for December, minus 0.5, slightly better than the 0.8, but there is deflation going on in Spain and perhaps coming soon to America. We'll see. And let's get into the U.S. data because there was, well, a ton of it. How about producer prices? So coming out of the U.S. factories, plus 0.8%. So U.S. factory are pushing out inflation, but it's not translating into a huge move in the consumer price index. How about the core, excluding food and energy, down slightly to 1.2%. So you can see the energy is having is not having a big effect here on producer prices as we might think. New York Empire State Manufacturing Index was expected at 6, went from 4.9 to 3.5. What does that mean? That the manufacturing sector in New York in January, the rate of expansion slowed. So we're just seeing slowing. But there's a challenge here because there's something what's interesting. I want to come back to the retail sales data because when you look at what's going on in the factory sector, you see industrial production went from minus 5.41 to minus 3.6. So that's an improvement, still negative on year over year. And we can go here and see that it's way below where industrial production needs to be to say the economy has fully recovered. It's way below that. Let's go back and look at the month over month, up 1.6%. How about manufacturing production up 0.9? So what you're seeing in the factory sector is some pretty good news. Like, hey, they're ramping up production here. Capacity utilization even went up from 73.4 to 74.5. Still not inflationary. You need this to be up here in the 80s%. So, you know, it's still what you're seeing is the U.S. factory sector is getting some steam. There's a problem with that. It's called retail sales. You know, all I hear about is this pent up demand. You know, all these people want to go spend. And retail sales fell for the third month in a row. So October, November, and December, retail sales fell. The year over year rate of change is still plus, but slowing to 2.9%. And so that's not hot. Excluding gas and automobiles, retail sales were down 2.1%. And we saw, I meant to save a chart for that, but I forgot. But you're seeing online sales drop dramatically. So if we look at retail sales, they're really hot here. But this, based on this three-month trend, this is like number is likely coming down. And you kind of think, well, maybe the stimulus will have some effect. Well, it hadn't had, you know, people knew about it coming up in the last 3 months, maybe. You know, December, it didn't work. So maybe we'll see a better number in January. Not sure. How about preliminary consumer confidence out of University of Michigan? Virtually unchanged across the board, but inflation expectations rose. And now this is interesting because one thing I skipped, and I just deliberately skipped it. So let's go back, is wherever it is. No. Mortgage applications. What happened there? I think, oh, that's because we covered it on Wednesday, right? Up 16%. So what is this telling you? People think inflation is coming. They think there's higher interest rates coming. They're trying to lock in those yields. Kind of something I kind of expected. So how about from the Fed? We have a renewal of Sorcerer JP's QE spell as expected. And this will run through the end of the month. And there will be 2 days we skip. One will be Monday because the markets are closed. And on that note, real quick, with markets being closed on Monday, will not be our normal macro show. So what I have done is I've gone through the quarterly report from Dr. Lacey Hunt. That'll air on Sunday, and then I'll do the Sunday market chart show on for Monday, and then we'll get back to normal on Wednesday. But you know, so just want to look. Always I like to check and make sure no changes in QE. A couple of things just to point out. Remember the dealers took I think 4 billion at the auction, and there's six of these 30-year long bonds. This 1.75, there's six of these in a month, so there's 10.5 billion here. That take off the 3.6, you're looking at what, somewhere around 7.1 billion of treasury securities that the primary dealers need to source from the open market. And yeah, that is going to do what for treasury yields. It's going to put absolutely downward pressure on them. And of course, we'll look at the commitment traders positioning on Wednesday. I've got some charts that came in and got some more coming. Let's switch over to the PowerPoints because I want to look at the money supply. And some of you noticed I was pondering this on Twitter yesterday. And what's going on with the money supply? The 12 in the rate of change is at 25.05 and rising, but it's slowing. The rate is slowing. The 6-month rate of change is still rising at 4.3. 3-month rate of change is 2 and is flat. What's going on in the with the money supply? Well, you can see it's flattening out. This is in billions of dollars. You can see it's just not seeing that go, go, go growth. Now, I am in a small minority of the camp that says that I believe that most of this move here was due to corporations pulling their revolvers and sticking the money in cash. That's I still maintain that view. Although most people believe this is all sitting in consumers' hands, which is not true at all, because then they would be spending money on retail sales and up to date on their bills, which we know is not true. And if not, tune into the Sunday show and you'll learn more about that. Let's dig into the M2. And we see savings deposits went down, demand deposits went up. Potentially there's some stimulus action going on the demand side, or people moving from savings to checking to get ready to pay end of month bills. That could have been. And we saw money flow out of institutional money funds, most likely into risk assets was where it goes. So what one of the views that I hold here is the contraction in credit is causing some of this problem. Now we can look at that at the H.8. Because remember, you know, money's created when people borrow. So if the growth in credit is low and there's not a lot of economic activity, then the money supply is going to slow down, and that is going to end up being dis or deflationary. How about bank credit rose $21 billion with securities and bank credit up $39 billion. Mortgage-backed securities up $32 billion. And U.S. Treasuries up 8. So here at when interest rates were at their recent peak here last week, what were the banks doing? Buying bonds, keeping interest rates low. They're keeping the mortgage rates particularly low with that. I just think they're having trouble keeping up with the Fed's demand at $80 billion a month. How about loans and leases? All commercial banks here down $17 billion. Commercial industrial down $15 billion. Residential real estate down 5 and is still in contraction on a year-over-year basis. Commercial real estate remains flat. Consumer loans, where are you? Consumer loans down $2 billion, that being off credit cards. And cash assets at banks, this is kind of interesting, down $146 billion. Let's jump back over into the PowerPoints. And here we can see the breakdown on that. Real estate loans, this is both commercial and residential, down to 0.7% from a year ago, headed into contraction. The 6 and 3 month range The 6 and 3 month are both at minus 0.5%. Commercial industrial loans, we're right now at back at March level. So if this didn't change at the end of March, this goes negative. As the rate is going to continue down, sometime in March, we're going to probably go will be negative. Maybe the first part of March, down in 9.92% from a year ago. Look at the 6 month rate of change. So you see money's being destroyed at minus 9.6%. And loans and leases, all commercial banks, growth rate is at a very unhealthy 3.19%. So these are negative impacts on the M2. 6 month rate of change is minus 2.3. 3 month rate of change is minus 0.9. And here's all that pent up demand from consumers. Their credit card growth rate is down minus 12% from a year ago. There's your pent up demand on your credit cards. Okay, so did you figure out what that the security was that I was referring to? I'm trying to get the charts pulled up. It's gold mine stocks. You know, they're a great proxy for liquidity. Some people, you could use Bitcoin. That hasn't been around as long. What's going on with gold miners? You see big minus 3% move in GDX. We'll cover this on the Sunday chart show on Monday, but you see this big move down. This is a sign of liquidity problems. And here's silver, silver mining stocks down almost 5% in a day. How about large or junior gold miners down almost 5%? So this is telling you there are liquidity problems in the market. And at the same time, you know, when we look at talk about bonds, one of the key things was, you know, you may remember those quant computer programs we talked about. At 1.1%, they were going to build their shorts. Now, remember, that number updates every day, so I'm going to assume that number's gone up a little bit. And here we're sitting just under 1.1% on the 10-year. And at some point, if we can see bond prices rise, which they should due to QE and the, you know, once that persistence, you know, with that persistence selling off, you can look at, you know, like the price action today, and you can see that, wow, it moved. You know, it moved up pretty good and held out pretty well. I don't know what's going on in the overnight here, but that doesn't really matter. So it didn't sell off like the rest of the equity market. Now, if bond prices can, you know, get moved higher here in the next week or two, it wouldn't surprise me then to see these quants come back in. And at that point, you're going to see financial conditions get really, really tight, because you'll have gold mining stocks fall, which I said is a problem. You see gold mining stocks fall and bond prices rally, it is a major red flag, because the broad equity market will follow gold mining stocks lower. And with that, thank you for being fans. Appreciate the likes, appreciate the subscribes. You know it means a lot to me. And with that, you'll have the Lacey Hunt special on Sunday, then the chart show on Monday, and then we'll be back for the normal macro show. We'll look at the commitment traders and other economic data on Wednesday, but watch the liquidity conditions coming into Tuesday. See if they get worse, and they probably were. And of course, it probably helped if I was ready for the next transition. Thanks for watching. We'll see you on macro show back on Wednesday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only, is not intended to provide investment or other advice. It is not to be construed as recommendation or solicitation by a selling security, financial instrument, or participate in particular trading strategies. Video was paired by Steam Van Meter or personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Value Inc. or Steam Van Meter Financial.